From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum this morning, this week, the San Francisco Giants find themselves in their third World Series in 5 years. The postseason has been one of legendary moments for the team, from an 18th inning win against the Washington Nationals to Travis Ishikawa's walk-off three-run home run Thursday night. We'll look back at how two wildcard teams arrived at the World Series, and we'll preview what awaits the Giants in Kansas City. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. And congratulations to the San Francisco Giants on winning the National League pennant after beating the St. Louis Cardinals 4-1 for the third time since 2002. And that was done on a walk-off home run by first baseman turned left fielder Travis Ishikawa at AT&T Park on Thursday night. This marks the sixth pennant win for the Giants since they have been in San Francisco and the 20th in the history of the franchise, and it means they begin a best-of-seven World Series starting tomorrow at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City against the American League pennant winners, the Kansas City Royals. Both teams, with less than 90 victories over the regular season, were wild card winners, and this will be the third World Series in 5 years for the Giants. In this Forum Hour, we preview and discuss this year's World Series. With us by phone, John Miller, the voice of the Giants and play-by-play announcer for the San Francisco Giants. And John, good to have you back on Forum.
Well, my pleasure, and Kansas City, everybody's talking about the series. Everybody's very excited here. So it's interesting to see it from the other side, because certainly people in San Francisco are very, very confident, I'm sure.
They're not confident in Kansas City?
No, they're extremely, extremely confident. I'm sure they don't understand why Giants fans would be so confident.
Well, let me tell you about some other voices we have here with you. Ann Killian is joining us as well, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. She's also in Kansas City. Ann, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
And also glad to have Dan Faust again with us, a freelance writer and author of the books Giants Baseball Experience and Giants Past and Present. He's here in studio. Dan, good morning.
Great to be here, Michael.
Glad to have you here. And John Miller, you know, when we look, well, first of all, let's talk about the walk-off home run. I never heard that term when I was a kid, walk-off hit or walk-off home run. It's become standard now, lexicon. But Russ Hodges came to mind because, of course, I don't remember it necessarily, but I've certainly heard the 1951 home run by Bobby Thompson. That's one of the first things, I guess, you thought of, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I was born 8 days after Bobby Thompson hit that fabled home run. I was always a little upset with my mom for you know, making me wait so long. But I remember it primarily because I grew up in the Bay Area, a Giants fan, and Russ Hodges came to San Francisco with the Giants. And every year, usually between games of a doubleheader sometime in the middle of the season, he would tell the story of that fabled 51 season and then lead right up to the big moment, Bobby Thompson batting against Ralph Branca with two men on, and the Giants down 4-2 in the bottom of the ninth. So I heard that over and over and over again, and it was part of being a Giants fan at that time. So the Giants, they didn't do it nearly as dramatically, but they sort of repeated that feat in 1962, just before I turned 11, when they got into a playoff with the Dodgers again and again. They won in the ninth inning, coming from behind, albeit in L.A. The crowd was totally quiet, and there were no home runs involved. But that was sort of like growing up as a Giants fan. You could not escape that. The odd part of it was the last thing that ever occurred to me was that Ishikawa, or even the inning before when Michael Morse was up, in each case, the last thing that occurred to me was that somebody would hit a home run. The Giants weren't hitting home runs. They'd gone about 10 days since their last home run.
Well, except for panic in that game, right?
Yeah, panic had hit one in the third inning, finally, which was had a great story behind that home run all to itself. But so I wasn't thinking of home runs. The Neshek had come in the eighth inning. Morris had hit only three ground balls in his only three at-bats, basically, in the whole postseason. He'd been missing for 6 weeks from the lineup with an injury. And boom, he hits a home run. Very exciting, very unexpected. Because nobody against Neshek did anything except strike out or hit comebackers or two hoppers to second in every game that he'd been in. And then there was Ishikawa, and you certainly knew there was possible for a hit or this or that. And we were all still puzzling why Mike Matheny did not bring in the left-hander, Choate from the bullpen to face him. And so there it was, and Ishikawa had his moment. And I remember when he hit the ball, and I said it was a home run. I got very excited and started into something else. And then I thought to myself, are you going to say the Giants win the pennant? How about that? And so I thought, I better get into that. And as he rounded third, I didn't know who it was at the moment, but it turned out to be Jake Peavy. Tried to jump right on top of him. And it reminded me of the scene of Bobby Thompson, the old films that we see. Leo DeRocher was the manager of the team, but also the third base coach for that game. And he jumped on Bobby Thompson as he rounded third base. And so I just said something to the effect of, Travis Ishikawa with the Bobby Thompson moment. And, for me and for any Giants fan, I think, of a certain age, everybody would know what that means. That's part of the history of the Giants.
Well, you have that history of the Giants. You also have, as you alluded to, some history in terms of backstories to this game. Not only, I think you were alluding to Joe Panik studying the cutter before the game of a former New York Yankees pitcher and feeling maybe he could hit that cutter, but also backstories like Ishikawa's, or for that matter, the backstory of Petit. And these are really moving stories. I guess maybe it's a reason in Ishikawa's case why Brian Sabian was brought to tears and weeping.
Yeah, and the Panik story wasn't so much that he was studying Mariano Rivera's cutter as he was studying Bill Miller's swing and his technique to hitting that cutter for a home run.
Yeah.
That was the pitch that he was looking at, and he only remembered it because he was such a big fan of the Yankees and of Rivera as a kid, and he remembered Bill Miller hitting this big home run against Mariano. So he studied that over and over again, looking at the hands and the arms and the hips and everything about the swing to see if he could duplicate that, because Wainwright's cutter had given him such a terrible time in St. Louis. So that story to me is great because he's such a young guy. He's a rookie, and here he was on his own initiative, trying to, and his own professionalism really, trying to see if he might find something that could help him. So Bill Miller, a former Giant, actually helping Joe Panik unwittingly in this big game for the Giants. But Ishikawa was actually contemplating retirement. He'd been released by the Pirates, the fifth team that had gotten rid of him in the last 3 years, and he got signed by the Giants and sent to the minor leagues, and he wasn't playing there. And he thought, well, maybe this is it. Maybe God is trying to tell me something. And he called his old baseball coach up at his old high school in Seattle just to see if maybe he could help him figure this out. Was it time for him to retire and move on, find another way to make a living, or should he stick it out? Was this sort of a test for him to find out if he could persevere in the face of all this adversity? And so he decided to persevere, which was great news for the Giants, as it turns out, and certainly unexpected, because why was he out there? He was the emergency. He wasn't a guy who was there all year. He wasn't a backup outfielder. He wasn't an outfielder at all. But he was a left-handed hitter. The Giants were short on the bench, and they put him out in the outfield for 3 days at the end of the regular season to see if he could even be passable out there, and he looked fine. So they said, okay.
Well, you know, John, we love these stories, baseball fans, about redemption and all that. Ishikawa made what I suppose by most standards would be a bad play in left field before he got up and hit that home run. So, you know, you can talk about redemption stories. That's one for the ages. But also, I mentioned Yusmeiro Petit in terms of backstories and powerful narratives, because he was pitching in Mexico. He was almost ready to give it up, too.
Petit had been at one time a very highly touted prospect who never delivered on all of that promise, and it was truly the journeyman of all journeymen when the Giants picked him up. And late last year, he got a start because the Giants had a need, and he pitched extremely well. And he had about maybe four starts in succession where he pitched extremely well. One of them, he came within one out of a perfect game. And finally, with two down in the ninth inning, a guy hit a liner into shallow right field, and Hunter Pence gave it his all, made a dive for it, but the ball dropped just in front of him for a hit. And then he calmly, as if that was no problem whatsoever, he retired the next guy. And I'll never forget when he was asked, he says, was that a big disappointment? Because a lot of times when a no-hitter ends, the pitcher has a hard time. There's so much emotion because it's such a momentous occasion, and now it has ended and you didn't do it. They have a hard time getting it back together. And he had no trouble at all, and he said simply, hey, it was still a really good game. I was real excited. It was the first time he'd ever pitched a complete game in his career, much less nearly having a perfect game. And with all of the adversity he'd gone through, all the disappointments, all of the failure that he'd gone through, he was still totally excited and thrilled just to have pitched such a great game, the best he had ever pitched. So I think that tells you a little bit about him. He's not easily upset. And this year he started, he relieved, he came in long relief, and so on and so forth. Whatever they need, he was there for them. And then when Lincecum went down because he just was so ineffective, and Petit happened to be at the same time on a record run out of the bullpen. He retired 46 consecutive hitters, like 15 and a third perfect innings, an all-time major league record. And they said, how can we not start this guy? So in he went, and he's been there ever since.
John Miller with us by phone from Kansas City, the voice of the Giants. And Ann Killian is also in Kansas City, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. And Ann, it may not be a dynasty, it may not even be the best team, man for man, but as you said, there's some kind of, you were talking about voodoo and mind tricks and maybe luck, but they just keep winning. It's weird.
Yeah.
Weird and wonderful.
Very entertaining. This team has, in all three of its postseason runs, has played these incredibly tense, tight games. Rarely is there a lopsided score in any of them. And, basically they just put the pressure on the other team and kind of wait for them to crack. And very often the other team cracks. Bochy ends up making the right decision, pushes the right button, and the Giants eke out a victory. The term torture was coined, I think, in 2010 for the first run, but all three of these runs have been that way. You know, they've been very, very tense and very kind of unpredictable. I mean, if you were in August, nobody would have thought that we'd be here in Kansas City for waiting for game one of the World Series with the San Francisco Giants.
Well, there was a terrible slump, and there were injuries. There was no Angel Pagan. There was no second baseman. I mean,
there's still no Angel Pagan.
That's right. But I mean, when you say nobody would have predicted, the whole, and Lincecum so erratic, as John Miller just pointed out, to have thought that we would be here in the World Series, and I say we, obviously. I'm supposed to be an objective journalist. I like the A's too, but home teams. But the truth of the matter is, it's been an extraordinary season, and I'm just wondering what you mentioned Bruce Bochy. What do you think when we match up him against Ned Yost?
Well, I mean, right now, I think it's a pretty universally considered that Bruce Bochy is the best postseason manager going in the game right now. This year may be his best managing job of all, considering what happened to this team, as you mentioned, all the injuries, losing Matt Cain, who is considered the horse of the rotation, Lincecum falls out of the rotation, they lose their backup catcher, they lose their first baseman for a long stretch of time, which is one of the reasons Ishikawa came up or was signed. They lose their center fielder, and it's considered that they don't know how to win a game without him. I mean, it was just so many things went wrong for this team, and really mixing and matching and trying to figure it out, and picking up a guy like Jake Peavy at the trade deadline. I think what Bochy has done this season has been really pretty remarkable.
We got to start calling him the genius instead of Bill Walsh, you think?
In terms of baseball, I mean, he doesn't get the credit, and part of that is because he doesn't want the credit. He's very low-key. He's a very humble guy. He's not one of these guys like, a Tony La Russa who enjoys grabbing the spotlight and being called the mastermind. He, if you ask him, like I asked him at a press conference a couple of days ago, a question you're never supposed to ask a baseball manager, which is about the role luck has played in this. And Some managers would snap your head off if you asked such a question, but Bochy just kind of laughed and said, well, you know, I'll take whatever luck I can. And, of course, it really isn't luck. The Giants, you know, some things have bounced their way, but also, you know, they've made their luck in many ways. And, but, yeah, I mean, Bochy, you know, if you want to use the G word about him, I don't think that's wrong.
Well, the team has a lot of character, and it certainly has some great attitude, and it has Hunter Pence, who is continuing to be the cheerleader superior. But, Ann, you're on the ground now. How does it look today in terms of how do you size it up between Bumgarner and Shields, and what do you observe for us?
Well, how it looks today is it's absolutely gorgeous here, so that's nice. And, you know, I don't know. You know, Kansas City is such a surprise. They haven't lost a game in the postseason. You know, it looked like they were going to lose to the A's and came back and won that game and have been on a roll ever since. So, you know, I just, you know, Bumgarner will be making his fifth start of the postseason, which is of this postseason alone, which is pretty remarkable. You know, the Giants are certainly the more experienced and seasoned team. You know, there's an awful lot of World Series experience on the team, and you know, I think that what has impressed me about this team ever since the calendar flipped to October is just how calm they are. It's really like muscle memory. I mean, it seems like they just, when it's postseason play, they know what to do. They know how to you know, some people call them slow breathers. You know, they don't panic in the moment. They don't get rattled. And I think, you know, on a World Series stage, that's going to go a long way for them.
Ann Killian, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, with us this morning from Kansas City. Dan Faust is here in studio, freelance writer, author of Giants Baseball Experience and Giants Past and Present, and longtime Giants fan. His son's here wearing a 54 hat. That year broke my heart. I was a Cleveland Indians fan then.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I mean, your son is following in your footsteps as an Uber fan. Let's talk about how you see things, though, Dan, because you get into this minor league talent, which has kind of surprised some people. I mean, especially Joe Panik. You get into the farm system, and things are much better, perhaps, than we had thought they were.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was funny because I can remember points this season. I feel like I'm maybe even as a transplanted Giants fan, I'm always an eternal optimist, whereas so many of the long-term Giants fans who were steeped in these years of heartbreak and torture, as Ann referred to, the you always expect the worst. And even after the after those two world championships this year, they said, oh, this team is different. This team doesn't have it. They're not going to be able to come back. And I tried to remind people what August of 2010 looked like, when the Padres appeared to be running away with the division, or what 2012 looked like, when the Giants were down, had to go to Cincinnati and win three straight games when the Reds hadn't lost three straight games at home all year.
And you also remind them that every other year is supposed to be a Giants year?
That's right. You know, it's an election year, so it must be the Giants' turn. So I don't know why that – apparently they people in Kansas City haven't realized that.
Well, how do you think things look? I mean, in terms of the Giants beating the Royals in this World Series. The Royals have surprised a lot of people, and they're strong in many ways.
They are, and you have to be a little bit nervous at a team that's won nine straight games, that's hasn't lost in the postseason. And yet, we've seen this before, where the Colorado Rockies swept the division series, swept the league championship series, and still lost the World Series. The last four teams to sweep the ALCS have all lost in the World Series, including the A's in 88 and 90. So nothing – you have to play the games, and I think the Royals present a different kind of challenge for the Giants, but I think the teams are really well matched. Madison Bumgarner has never given up a run in the World Series in two World Series starts. You have to like the Giants' chances.
Well, when you say the Royals are a different kind of team, what do you mean?
Well, I think they're a team that runs a lot. That game against the A's, where even in the late innings, they're stealing bases, and most managers, most teams are very conservative or scared to make an out on the bases. That's kind of a cardinal rule. And they showed no fear and were stealing second. We're stealing third base with impunity. And I think that's going to be a scary thing for the Giants. The Giants, You know, Buster Posey has been behind the plate for every game of this postseason. We don't know, is he wearing down? He threw out about 30% of runners this year. It's going to be a real test for him and for the pitching staff to try to hold these guys on and not get rattled by the presence of all
everybody
these
keeps
runners.
Saying eventually Posey will be at first base again, but when that's going to happen, I can't imagine. Maybe you have to have a couple of retirements before it's likely to happen, but one hopes that he doesn't get injured back there. Let me go back to you, John Miller, and just get your assessment on this. But before I do, I'm interested in know your thoughts about what kind of audience. You know, there's always been kind of a Eastern Bloc and Atlantic Seaboard teams getting many more listeners, many more viewers. I guess we can expect that and be dissed from the West Coast and the Middle West again?
Well, it could be, and I don't think anybody in the Bay Area or here in America's heartland are going to be worried about that. I think they'll be. This will be the number one program in the Bay Area and in Kansas City and environs, without question. So, baseball seems to have become, on a national level, more of a regional sport in the last few years for some reason. But and you could do an entire program. You and I could just do an entire program as I detail all of my theories as to why that has happened. But for now, I think the interest is...
Invite me. I'll do it with you.
Okay. Yeah. I'm ready. But I think the interest is going to be huge in this area. And I'm confident that the ratings may be a little bit higher than people expect, simply because you have a fresh story in the Kansas City Royals, very fresh story, and they, I think, captured the imagination of a lot of baseball fans, the way they rose to the occasion and came roaring back against the Athletics, because that game was, they were dead in the water. That game was over. They were down, they weren't just behind in the eighth inning, they're behind by four runs. You don't come back in a big game like that from four runs down in the eighth and win, and yet they did, and they did it again. They were behind by a run in the 12th inning and came from behind and won, and now they're on a roll like few teams have ever been on, because they have never lost a game since. How Oakland, Oakland may have been the team that might have been here based on the fact that they were the one team that looked like they were about to beat Kansas City. Nobody else has even looked like they're even close to beating the Royals in this postseason. So, very good team. But at the same time, I think with Madison Bumgarner on the mound in Game 1 against James Shields, even though Shields pitched a shutout against the Giants when they faced them here back in August, I think it's hard to feel like Bumgarner is not the perfect guy for that kind of a game. So, and he's the equalizer. So we'll see. I do remember back in August, there was a time where the Giants started to get hot and looked like they really could be one of the wild card teams. And Buster Posey made the statement that that these games were all huge, because he knew that if they could get into October baseball, that he knew what this group of guys was capable of there, because so many of them had been there before and shown what they could do in October. So I think that's something to remember, that Buster was absolutely right. They have nine guys who have been on all three of these World Series teams, and four of them are those relievers, Affeldt, Lopez, Casilla, Romo. And one thing that's been true in this postseason time for the Giants, those guys are all better in the postseason than they were in the regular season.
And so,
always one postseason
so
it, after another.
Sandoval, too, I think, falls into that category. I'm going to give out the number and invite those of you listening to join us. We do welcome your involvement. Are you excited? How do things look for the World Series? Tell us about your feelings about the Giants. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or email forum at kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Tomorrow, the World Series begins. The San Francisco Giants will be battling against the Kansas City Royals, and we're talking about how things look for that World Series and talking about the Giants' season. They are indeed the pennant winner of the National League. And John Miller with us, the voice of the Giants play-by-play announcer for them, and Ann Killian, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. And Dan Foss is here in studio, freelance writer and author of such books as Giants Baseball Experience and Giants Past and Present. And we thought we'd bring Ray Ratto into this discussion, too, columnist with CNSBayArea.com. He's been a San Francisco Bay Area sports writer since the 1970s. And Ray Ratto, good to have you back on Forum. Ray, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. I couldn't for a moment there. Good to have you. I'm looking at a column you did where you say the Royals and the Giants are both six inning game teams. They get six innings from their starting pitchers and enough of a lead to allow their bullpens to come in and harpoon any survivors. And they also have excellent fielding metrics, so they have a harder time forcing mistakes from each other than they did against the Nationals, Cardinals, Tigers, or Orioles.
Yeah, I think their bullpens are that good, and I think they're that they're in fact dominant. So that what you end up with is whoever's ahead gets to use who they want in the order in which they want, and it really makes a huge difference for either team. Right? The Giants are an odd team in that they don't have any power pitchers except for Hunter Strickland, but they do it with sort of art and guile. Whereas the Royals have three upper 90s fastballs guys. And that makes that's a huge advantage for them because you can't hit that many guys that hard that often. So, yeah, I think the team that's ahead after six has a great advantage.
Yeah, but you say also that they're unlike the Giants in many more things. They run a lot. We just heard Dan Foss say that. But they're also not only three times as much as many steals on the record and lots of extra bases. They also don't walk that much, and they don't strike out a lot.
Well, they don't walk, but they're a classic small ball team in that they really live off their pitching and defense. But when they get on, they are not only not afraid to take the extra base, they almost insist on it. And they basically make you play perfect baseball to beat them. And that's been particularly true in the last month where they've only lost four games. They're that fast. They don't make mistakes in the field. And when they get the kind of starting pitching that gets them to that bullpen, they are a very tough nut to crack.
When we go back to you, and Killian, we're going to bring our callers into this shortly, but can you stack up the benches for us in terms of the strengths of the benches? I'm talking about, you know, players like on the Giants team, Duffy and Arias and Perez versus what we would think of as the bench with the Royals.
No, actually, I can't. I have not dug into the Royals bench at all. I've been focused on the Giants. But I do know that the Giants have a shorter bench than they've had in past World Series. And that is, again, a challenge that Bochy has had in terms of, you know, when he looks at his bench, now he has Michael Morse, who will be a designated hitter.
He'll be a DH, yeah.
Yeah. But beyond that, you know, you're looking at Ishikawa and Duffy and, you know, a couple weeks ago, you didn't think that bench could do too much. Now, you know, it's produced as we've gone through the postseason, so there's got to be more confidence in it. But really, it is definitely a shorter bench than Bochy's had in the past.
But how do they compare Ray Ratto to Kansas City?
Well, Kansas City has a couple of things that the Giants don't have. Is they can go to a couple of guys, one who's basically a designated base stealer in Terrence Gore, and the other is Jared Dyson, who becomes a defensive replacement in the outfield. And when he is in the outfield instead of Aoki, they probably, in fact, they almost certainly have the best defensive outfield in baseball because Alex Gordon is superb. Lorenzo Cain has extraordinary range, and Dyson is sensational. So their bench is better that way. They also have the notorious Giant killer, Ty Willingham, who has tortured the Giants for years. So those are three dynamic figures right there. Beyond that, they don't really go to their bench very much, but those three guys will get a lot of play, particularly in this series, and I think that's probably where the advantage lies.
Well, one person who may not get any play, Dan Faust, is Lincecum, and that's strange for many fans of Tim Lincecum. He was supposed to be maybe the bullpen go-to guy, but clearly Bochy has not gone to him yet, and we don't know if he will.
No, it's kind of a sad story, especially earlier this year, you know, on June 26th, Lincecum threw his second career no-hitter, looked like maybe he was turning things around. He that game and around that time, a few strong games where he had, instead of trying to overpower people, he was starting to become more of a pitcher, let them hit the ball to his fielders, but he just fell apart and I don't know if it's in his head or what. He came out of the bullpen a few times, did miserably, particularly in that game where they lost to the Dodgers 17-0, and so I think he's there Bochy respects him, but I don't think there's any chance of him getting into a game that's anywhere close. The only time Bochy said he thought about using him was in that 18-inning game against the Nationals, that epic game that the Giants won. And it was only if the Nationals managed to tie the score in the bottom of the 18th and there was pretty much nobody left in the bullpen would Timmy have come in. So it's kind of a sad story. Tim, obviously Lincecum has contributed to this team but I don't know what his future is with the Giants at this point.
Well, we're going to go to your calls and emails. And by the way, you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. If you have questions or comments about the Giants season or what's up ahead with the World Series, you can also email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. And you can also post questions or comments onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And let me go to some emails here. John Miller, let me go to you with this. A listener says, outside of Bumgarner, how does the rest of the starting rotation match up against Kansas City?
I think right now the Giants are very happy with their first three after Bumgarner. Jake Peavy, who really sort of filled the Matt Cain role for the Giants down the stretch of the season, and I don't think they could have gotten into the postseason without him. And he pitched it very well in Washington. And not quite as well, but pretty well, keeping them in the ballgame in St. Louis. So I think they're happy with Peavy. Peavy has a history against the Royals. It's not that stellar, however, so we'll see. And then Tim Hudson, who seemed to be rejuvenated in each of his October starts, maybe the extra time off, the extra days off may have helped him at age 39, but... after a great first half and not so great second half, he had the traits of that first half. So I think they're very confident. The big question is Ryan Vogelsong, who really was very poor in his last start against the Cardinals, and that's where Yusmeiro Petit came into play and three strong innings that helped the Giants win that game after another six-inning outing in that 18-inning ball game. So that's where Petit has been so important in this postseason, and he's the thing. He has the role that Lincecum had out of the bullpen 2 years ago, and that no other team really seems to have in their bullpen, a guy who could come in, go three or six or however many you need without any too much trouble.
Let me read some of your tweets and emails, and then we'll go to your calls. Listener tweets, Bruce Bochy mirrors the San Francisco Giants principal owner, Charles Johnson, humble, strategic, and team-oriented. And speaking of team ownership, I have to read this. Nick says, all due respect to the Giants and their fans, but as an A's fan, can I please ask you to stop with the torture thing? The Giants have two rings and are pretty much a fait accompli for their third. The torture is over. You want torture? Try decades under Lou Wolfe. All right, here's Kirk, who writes, Kansas City is a better team. Old school style versus new school. Lucky style. Tear them up, KC. Al writes, everyone remembers Thompson's giant home run. What seems forgotten is leading up to that shot, the Giants were 13 games behind the Dodgers, the roots of this year's terrific run to the top. And another listener says, to respond to Ann's comment about what slow breathers the Giants are is clear when Crawford hit Belt's glove during a bathroom break before the top of the ninth of a pennant-winning game. These guys, for the most part, from previous experience, know what's coming in these big games and have learned to stay calm and keep working toward the goal of scoring. Let me go to your calls here. One more email, though. Kiyoshi writes, and let me, John Miller, get your thoughts about this. He says, how is it possible for Ishikawa to not be NLCS MVP? He hit 385 with seven RBIs, and despite Bumgarner's first game heroics, Ishikawa was the most consistent player. He played out of position nearly flawlessly, including a dramatic walk-off in Game 10, Game 5. Greg Papa was certainly baffled, as should all true baseball fans be. Does John think Ishikawa's home run and pick will become as legendary as the catch in Clark's pick?
Well, I can't predict the future in that regard, but I will say that even on our broadcast, we talked about whether he should have been the rightful MVP or not, and the votes are tabulated, the people who vote on that award, and I've voted on it several times in the past when doing the national broadcast in the postseason, but they come by at about the eighth inning and take the ballots, and then they count them up and have them all ready to go as soon as the game is over. So Ishikawa just hit it, post-voting, I think. So the voting was tabulated too quickly. I think he would have gotten a few votes for sure and definitely been in the running for that award if they'd taken it after he hit the home run, without question.
We'll go to your calls now. We begin, Rick, with you. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, good morning, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. You know, first I'd like to say it's an honor to speak to John Miller. Sir, I think you have the best pipes, with apologies to Vin Scully and Dwayne Kuiper, in the history of baseball. But my question might best be answered by Ann or Dan, which is, in a time when the playoffs in baseball had expanded so much, you don't even need to win your division to make it the World Series. You don't even need to be the team with the best record of all the non-division winners. And I wondered how you felt about the impact, not just on the postseason, but on the importance of the regular season as a result of the, let's say, the delusion or the dilution of season achievement in order to get to the World Series.
Yeah, Dan Foss, that troubles a lot of people. You know, one game in Pittsburgh, I happen to have relatives in Pittsburgh, it's one game and it's all over.
Right, and of course, suddenly I like that second wild card very much, because that's how the Giants were able to sneak into the playoffs. The idea that you play that game, and the idea of that wild card game was to put the wild card at a disadvantage, because we've seen the wild cards roll to the World Series, and now, you know, ironically enough, we have two wild cards in the World Series. But the idea was, hey, you know, the Giants had to use Bumgarner in that game, so he couldn't pitch until late in the series against the Nationals. The Royals had that 12-inning game against the A's. It was supposed to put them at a disadvantage going into the next series, but instead it seemed to help light a fire into both teams and give them some momentum coming into it.
Yeah, and Kelly, can I get your take on this wild card season?
Well, yeah, I mean, we know that the reason that they have the second wild card and the first wild card is, you know, to keep more teams involved, to keep the interest up, you know, heading into August and September. And, you know, I don't mind it. I think it's, it makes for a different feeling of a team when they haven't been a dominant team all season. But I think it makes it exciting, and I think it makes it unpredictable. I think it puts extra pressure on the managers to manage their way through basically what is a seventh game, and then into a short series, and then into a seven game series. I mean, it's really interesting. And I do think, you know, I wrote a little bit tongue in cheek about whether the Giants are a dynasty. And certainly I got, you know, outrage from Yankees fans who said, dynasties are the best team that pummels the opposition year in and year out and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, this is a different, if the Giants were to win this third World Series in 5 years, you get to use the D word about them, but it's definitely different because they have not been a dominant team during the regular season. But, you know, dynasties are made in the postseason, and it would definitely be a different kind of feel of a dynasty. But I think, you know, that's kind of what the modern sports era is producing, is with wild cards and free agency and, you know, the way things have gone in sports. You don't have a classic dynasty, but if you can maneuver through this kind of a postseason, I think you're allowed to use that word.
Well, Ray Ratto, I think you eschew that word, don't you?
I mean, you have to change the definition of it, largely because, and baseball is the most egregious offender, because it's by no means the fairest playoff system. You can look at if you have a playoff system in which everybody doesn't play the same number of games, or teams have byes, you're going to have inequities. Sometimes they work for teams, sometimes they work against them. But in terms of a dynasty, I think it's harder to make the case that the Giants are a dynasty in the same way that the Yankees were in the late 90s, or the Atlanta Braves, or the Lakers, or the Celtics, because they basically won in alternate years. And there have been so few examples of that it's hard to really find the name for what they've done. They've been the best team in August and September in the last three even numbered years. And I'm not sure that's a dynasty, but I'm not sure that matters either. I think it's a semantic argument that, frankly, you know, is probably as suited for online dictionary fans as it is sports fans.
Let me go to another caller, and that's Xander. Xander, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. First of all, I'd like to say it's an honor to speak to you, Mr. Miller. I so enjoy your broadcast. I wonder what you think the running game of Kansas City is going to have effect-wise on our pitching staff. Can Buster Posey keep them from running? Is it important? Is it going to throw our pitchers off? Thanks. I'll listen off air.
All right. Thank you for the call. John Miller.
I think the first off, it's the catcher has his role,
And Buster Posey certainly has a strong arm, but I think it starts with the pitcher. The pitcher's got to do a strong job of keeping the runner at first from getting a big jump. And Bumgarner was very good at that. He had one of his best years, I think. It was about 43% success rate, or rather 43% of the guys who tried to steal with Bumgarner pitching were thrown out, which is excellent. So if the pitchers give Posey a chance to do it, I think Posey will be able to play his role. And I think that both Bumgarner and Peavy were very, very strong against the running game. And so was Vogelsong. The guy who did not do well in that regard was Tim Hudson. I think it was about an 83% success ratio for base dealers when Hudson was pitching. So he just didn't give the catcher much of a chance to do it. But I think that's the real key. And I think the Giants would even start before that. Bruce Bochy would probably like to start with just keeping those fast guys off base. Don't let those guys get on in the first place. So we'll see if they're successful in that.
And we'll go to another of your calls. Hillary, thanks for waiting. You're on. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm providing a slightly less analytical comment, but fairly certain that the Giants will win the World Series from a more superstitious standpoint. I had a baby in 2010. I had one in 2012. I'm pregnant with my third. So it's not even a question in my mind that we're going to win the World Series.
The nativities of Hillary from Los Gatos will indeed determine the series. Thank you, Hillary, for that. Actually, Dan Fost, I mean, you've been running the superstition thing with your kid for how long now?
Absolutely.
His whole life.
Well, since 2010. You know, when I wrote my first book, I tracked down a guy. I was really looking into the curse of the Giants and why hadn't they won in over half a century in San Francisco. And so I looked for people who went to that last game at the Polo Grounds, which was an absolute disaster. And I found a guy who had been a 12-year-old kid there. He's now a retired banker living in Florida named Bob Lineweaver. And Bob sent me a hat that he had bought as a kid in New York City at Cosby's Sporting Goods. And it was in 1954, the last year the Giants had won the World Series. And my son wore that hat. Harry wore that hat in the 2010 World Series. He wore it in game one and two when the Giants won. We went to a friend's house. They gave us these NL champs hats. So he took it off, wore that. They lost game three. They said, okay, Harry, we got to wear the hat. And he wore it for games four and five, and the Giants won. So, you know, the fans, if we all collectively do our part, and Hillary, you know, we hope you have a lots more babies in the next few years to keep the Giants in the World Series.
There is no sport, no professional sport that has as much superstition attached, not only to the managers and the players, but also the fans than baseball. Here's Alex from Berkeley who writes, how concerned are you with Strickland's role moving forward? He hasn't had a postseason outing yet that hasn't been a disaster. Ann Killian? Ann, are you? Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, Ann, sure. Did you hear the question?
I'm sorry. I'm in a very noisy press box.
No, it was just a listener from Berkeley who wants to know about Strickland's rule moving forward because, as this listener points out, he hasn't had a postseason outing that hasn't been a disaster. Well, that may be overstating it somewhat.
I think that's overstating it quite a bit. I think, you know, he had a pretty fantastic debut postseason in Washington.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Bochy's going to be careful with him of where he puts him in. You know, he doesn't want to see any more long bombs, for sure. But, you know, Strickland was up and ready to go into the game on whatever day that was. I've lost track of days. Wednesday or whenever it was.
Well, he's pitching beyond 100 miles an hour, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the hardest thrower out of the bullpen, and he'll have a role. So
it's been all left-handers.
Need to chill out a little bit about him.
Well, when we talk about his role or the possible, what happened to Bochy's son? He was on the list and he never had a mound appearance.
He never made a postseason roster. He was just brought up in September.
Now let me bring up another caller, and that's you, Brian. Hi.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to ask your guest what they thought about the presence of, you know, when I looked at the playoffs, I said, well, I'm an A's fan. I thought, well, who's going to win? And I looked at the teams with the most Venezuelan players on it. And, of course, the Giants have four. The Royals have three. So I already know who's going to win the World Series. And those other two teams that are out of it didn't have any Venezuelan players on their roster. I was just wondering what they thought about the influence of Venezuelan players, especially with the Giants, since the last two wins in the World Series.
How do we compare number of Venezuelan players to number of births from Hillary? I don't know what plays a more integral role here. But Ray Ratto, that's a whole phenomenon now. I mean, Venezuela's really, in many ways, infiltrated most of the teams in the major leagues.
Well, I mean, and earlier this year, the talk was about more Cubans. I don't sort of pay that much attention to it because most of baseball really scours the entire Caribbean basin, and there are enough players coming from all countries right now, so that when you get a few guys from one country that pop up, people seem to think it's a trend. The only one that is interesting is Cuba, because it's so much harder to get players out of there. They have to go through far more extraordinary lengths. But for the most part, I think we're talking about coincidences. And I don't know that the Venezuelans are doing anything different than they were doing 10 years ago or 20 years ago, or that they're being scouted any differently.
Let me thank the caller and go to an email here from Tim, who writes, part of the intrigue of the Giants' success in recent years is that they represent a battle between two conflicting American ideals, the nobility of the underdog versus the glory of brute strength. When mainstream media consistently sides with the team that wins the more traditional way, that is, they win by brute strength and speed of individual team members, they take a position which begs to be spoiled by that other American idol, the underdog, in this case, the team that wins more by team coherence, savvy, and timing. And let me go to another of your calls. From Guerneville, we welcome John. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I really appreciate that last email. It's kind of in the same vein of what I wanted to talk about. I was wondering if your guests saw David Schoenfeld's article on ESPN called Welcome to the Worst World Series Ever, which is just a real hack piece on the Giants and the Royals and this World Series in general.
And what does he say? Why is it the worst World Series ever?
We are the very unexciting, low-scoring ball clubs that kind of limped our way in, and nobody wants to see this happen without much regard to how we know that the games were actually won, which were extremely exciting, and nail-biters won the Giants' way.
Yeah, that's the Eastern Bloc again, I think. Dan Foss, comment from you?
Yeah, I think people probably said the same thing in 91 when the Twins and Braves made it to the World Series, and they had both gone from last place to first place that year, and they were both seen as a bunch of little pipsqueaks, and they turned in probably one of the greatest World Series of all time. Some people think it was the best. So you got to wait for to see the games played, and I think that this guy must be completely off base, because so many games this postseason have come right down to the wire. They've been tight games. They're well pitched. The Giants and Royals are playing the game the way it should be played. Maybe they're not hitting all these home runs. They're playing good defense. They're pitching well. They're getting timely hits. They're bunting. It's a fundamental baseball, and I think the potential is for a really great World Series.
And let me thank the caller. And John Miller, you were talking before about the lack of home run production by the Giants until, well, Panic, Morris, and Ishikawa in this last game. But I believe the Kansas City Royals are last in the majors in home run production, are they not?
Yeah, they were until they got to the postseason.
Right.
And all of a
yeah.
sudden, they were out-homering everybody, and especially adept at hitting home runs in the 10th inning and the 12th inning and in extra innings. So it is kind of astonishing what the Royals did. The Cardinals did the same thing in the National League postseason. They were dead last in the National League in home runs in the regular season. Then they hit 7 against the Dodgers in a 4-game series, and they kept hitting them against the Giants as well. So it really seems to mean absolutely nothing, whatever these teams did in the regular season. And let's face it, with the Giants, the team that the Giants put out there right now is not the same team that they put out there most of the regular season. So I think that is a dramatic difference. And the bullpen that they use right now, that they're going to use in the big spots, that's also different than from the regular season. The whole dynamic of the way the game is played changes in the regular season. And I think that's where the Giants' advantage really lies. And we may 3, 4, 5 years from now, we could might sit here talking about the Kansas City Royals and this a great run that the Royals have had. Maybe they've got a bunch of guys who are the same, but the Giants have these, especially the relief pitchers, who just seem to be better in the postseason. They don't ever give up a lead, and those are the guys that Bochy goes to from the sixth inning onward. Plus, he's got Yusmeiro Petit, the fifth guy, who could come in the middle of a game and turn it around, as he did in Game 4 of the League Championship Series. So I think those are the key elements. With all the days off, you only need the 4 starters, and if 3 of them are pitching well, you're in excellent shape. And then that bullpen, and you don't need much more of a bullpen than that because of all the days off. The Yankees did it back in the late 90s and into the 2000s with Mariano Rivera and just a couple of other guys who were always better in the postseason. And Buster Posey, I think, he, in effect, is the captain of this ball club, the true heart and soul, the leader of the ball club. And he has a lot of the same characteristics as did Derek Jeter on those Yankee teams as well. He's a great player, but also a guy who seems to keep guys in line in the clubhouse, stuff you don't hear about except through back channels. But I think Buster, to me, it has a lot of similarities. He's not a great interview. He's not liable to say anything other than platitudes and sort of a boring kind of comments, but that was exactly the way Jeter was. But so we'll see if this Giants team can do it again. But so far, I think that they have the group that's best put together for a postseason run like this, and that is something entirely different than having the best group put together for a 6-month run in the regular season.
Well, we'll leave it there and go Giants. Let me extend thanks to John Miller, the voice of the San Francisco Giants, play-by-play announcer Ray Ratto from CSNBayArea.com, and columnist Aaron Ann Killian, who's a columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, and Dan Faust, who joined us here in studio, freelance writer and author of Giants Baseball Experience and Giants Past and Present. We look forward to the World Series and look forward to what we hope will be a Giant victory. Now, I'm supposed to be the objective journalist, to an exciting World Series. How's that sound? Thank you for being a part of this morning's program. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Our producers are Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Howard Gelman, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.